Chapter 4. Eyes in the Darkness. There was still a tiny bit of heat left in the coals. They glowed in a ring of stones in the center of a group of huts. Auntie Jo was including a sketch. Katie flipped the page over, and there was a ring of little houses. They were made of bowed branches with roofs of layered leaves. Suddenly, just as we crept closer for a better look, the wind shifted, a cloud covered the moon, and we were left in utter darkness. In that blackness, I saw more pairs of shining eyes looking back at me than I felt was really necessary. I was just about to say to Josephine that maybe we had better leave this adventure until morning, when the cloud passed and we found ourselves surrounded. I could tell by their height that they were members of the Baka people. The tallest among them reached only 5 feet. The Baka were once referred to as pygmies, though that is no longer considered a respectful term. The 30 tribesmen stared at us and we stared back, not quite sure what to do. Suddenly, a boy not much older than you leaned forward and said, "Edmund?" I was naturally amazed and said, "Yes." "Montague?" he asked with a heavy accent. "Right again," I told him. "Whale's tail, right?" You may be asking yourself, as I was, how in the world he knew anything about the restaurant. I found out later that evening, after our clever Auntie Jo made good use of her knowledge of the Bantu languages, that in one of the huts was a tiny television powered by a gas generator. It was a holiday for the Baka, and we were soon invited to watch their dancing and witness up close the fire of many colors. I saw them scatter a powder of some sort into the flames. They made us a parting gift of it, and I intend to analyze it when I am back at my laboratory. I have been adding it to our balloon flame, and our speed has increased dramatically. I am mailing this from Morocco, as we have stopped to purchase more fuel and provisions. We shall likely have finished the race by the time this letter reaches you. Whether we win or not, we both look forward to exploring the pyramids before taking a little tour of the Mediterranean. I have promised Auntie Jo a breakfast of crepes on the beach in France. Cross your fingers and wish us luck. Be good for your mum and give her our love. Your devoted Uncle Edmund. P.S. Auntie Jo says she would like to add a few words. Well, as usual, your Uncle Edmund has given you all the news. We are having a lovely time, and I have seen so many species of bird to draw. I've been brushing up on my African languages, as Uncle Edmund told you. The Bantu languages, including Swahili, are not too difficult, but their native language is Baka, which I had never heard before. Maybe I can teach you a little when we return. I'm looking forward to more time in Egypt, but we miss you and your mom very much and hope you are having a great summer. Kwaheri. Goodbye. Aunt Josephine, XXX. Katie sighed and closed her eyes. Africa. She'd never been anywhere like that. The farthest she'd been was when her mom had taken her camping in the Boundary Waters last summer. She frowned. Usually her mom was too busy to take a week off for vacation, but at the time Katie had just been excited to go somewhere. She remembered it so clearly. The long drive north, seeing Lake Superior for the first time, singing silly songs and stopping at all the scenic overlooks to take pictures. They had loaded up the canoe at Moosehorn Outfitters and paddled at dusk to the far side of Trout Lake. Loons called to each other and fish splashed near the edge of the island where they made camp. They built a fire and pitched the tent. The fire flickered, making shadows on the tent frame, and the forest around them was so inviting and mysterious that Katie felt like she was on one of Uncle Edmund's expeditions where anything could happen. In the morning, her mom woke her up early and they paddled and portaged to Gull Lake to see Glory Falls. It was a long hike up, but worth it. The falls were rain-soaked and wild, and the sun made rainbows in the mist at the bottom. They stayed for 4 days and went fishing and swimming and read books to each other. On the drive home, Katie slept most of the way. When she woke up in the driveway, she was surprised to see a moving van parked in front of the house. "Who's here?" she asked, still half asleep. Her mom's mouth was thin. "Your dad." "Dad's home? I thought he was working in Singapore." Her mom sighed and turned to her. "No, Katie, your dad and I are getting a divorce." "I'm sorry, honey. He was supposed to have his things moved out before we got back." Katie's head was still so heavy with sleep that it didn't make sense for a minute. He was always gone for work, but this was different. "Wait, that's why you took me camping? So you could sneak Dad out of the house?" Katie's eyes stung. Her mom didn't answer. Her dad walked out with a box in his arms and saw them. "Maybe you should go over to Rachel's." Katie stared at her. "Please don't make this more difficult. I'll give her a call and see if you can spend the night." That was the night that Katie had found Cricket in the barn, and Rachel let her bring the kitten inside to sleep with her. Katie wasn't sure if her mom felt guilty, or if she really did want a cat after all, but she hadn't said anything when Katie carried Cricket home the next morning. The moving truck was gone. "He didn't know what to say, Katie. He said he'll write you a letter." He had, but not for a month and a half. At first she had thought it was from Uncle Edmund, since he was the only one who sent her airmail. His letter had just said all the stuff parents are supposed to say when they get divorced, but how they still love you and it's not your fault, blah, blah, blah. She wanted to throw the letter away, but she wasn't brave enough, so it sat in her sock drawer in its envelope, waiting for a reply. Cricket butted Katie's hand, and she came back to the present. She shook her head. "I really don't want to think about that right now, especially since I'm going to have to see him next month. Wouldn't it be great if Uncle Edmund was the one who wanted me to spend a month with him this summer? I'd go flying off to Africa and see him and Auntie Jo in a heartbeat." She closed her eyes again and scratched Cricket behind the ear. Africa. Katie squinted to keep the sun out of her eyes. The thunder of hooves pounded in her ears. The wind rippled her t-shirt and whirled the dust stirred up by the wildebeests. She gripped the bull with her knees and held onto its shaggy hump with both hands. All around her, she saw curving horns and heard strange bellows. Over her shoulder, she saw that one of the newborn calves was faltering. The lions were getting closer. Katie kicked her heels into the bull and turned, cutting through the stream of galloping animals. She wheeled around, riding in front of the calf just in time. The bull jabbed at the air with his horns, and she charged into the pride of lions. Their roars faltered. She pushed the wildebeest on again, and even the bravest of the predators turned and ran, growling as they went. Suddenly, she felt a wet nose on her arm, and there, instead of the calf, was Cricket. "Sorry, was I ignoring you? Don't tell Mom, or she'll call me a space cadet again." Yeah, if Uncle Edmund asked, I'd go to Africa in a heartbeat.